Thank you everyone for coming. It's a pleasure to be here. And I'm going to take the first shot to our oral topic. I'm going to share with you some reflections and ideas that for the last probably 2-3 years, my colleague here, Dr. Nico Rizzo, and I have been having around the concept of blue zones. I'm going to start by framing this reflection, this discussion on blue zones against the context of some of the most present public health issues in the 21st century here in the United States. And I will continue to sort of give an overview of blue zones and the value that blue zones have as a paradigm for community transformation work and as a quintessential healthographic concept. So, Americans in general suffer less now from infectious diseases, but what we are dealing with, as all of you are aware, are chronic diseases that are largely rooted in health behaviors. We know that things like obesity, shortens life expectancy, smoking, and so on. So this is really, in my mind, probably the single most important public health challenge that we have in the United States. There are some others, but certainly chronic diseases, lifestyle related, are certainly a big issue. The relevance and significance of this lifestyle related chronic diseases is that they're largely preventable, and that's important. They're preventable, and we can intervene to try to reduce risks and prevalence around them. Now, we also know that as a nation we have been losing ground. When we compare ourselves with most of the other developed nations, we're lagging behind in life expectancies and a number of other indicators. And this largely manifests itself, and this is a health graphic concept right here. The reason why we lag behind most other developed nations is related to the health disparities, the health inequities that we have. So the poor outcomes for chronic diseases are not evenly distributed among the population. They impact largely certain segments of the population. And we see this manifested clearly across a variety of geographic patterns when it comes to different outcomes. This is an example taken from the work on the county health rankings that University of Wisconsin has been involved in, sponsored by Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Now, I wanted to note that even though chronic diseases, serious public health challenge, lifestyle related, rooted in health behaviors, in reality, this type of lifestyle related diseases, lifestyle itself, behavioral choices, cannot be divorced from context, from environment. Although I still see too many people thinking that lifestyle-related diseases can be thought of as if we lived in a bubble, like David Benner, the bubble boy. Some of you might have heard about him, who lived only until the age of 12, but he lived all of his life in a bubble. But that's not the case with real life. Lifestyle happens in a specific context, and this is important to understand, because when we're talking about interventions and how we can improve outcomes with respect to chronic diseases, we need to take this into account. We need to incorporate explicitly this idea that lifestyle happens in specific contexts. I want to bring to you two quotes from Anthony Gattrell, a British medical geographer who I think has laid the foundation for the field to a great extent. And in his book called Geographies of Health, he says, "We all have our own geographies as well as our biographies. Our health and our geographies are inextricably linked. Where you live affects your risk of disease or ill health." And so here we come to the concept of healthography. If you know someone in real estate, or you've heard many times before, you know, the old saying of location, location, location when it comes to real estate. Well, when it comes to healthography, what we have is context, context, context. So Gatrell says, modern public health sees the environment as social and psychological, not merely as physical. In this sense, then, environment and place converge to provide spatial context for health that transcends the individual's own behavior and health outcomes. So we could think of healthography essentially in terms of contextualizing health. So healthography is the contextualization of public health. Now, I want to bring your attention to the fact that it's not the lack of interventions for many different things that we suffer from. However, despite this great availability now of many types of interventions, we have not made tremendous progress on some fronts. We have still issues with obesity, and we have a stagnation on some other important fronts. Like tobacco smoking. So I would argue that we need to aim at transforming communities if we want to make a dent in our battle against chronic diseases. We need to take this contextual approach to health so that our interventions are designed so that they're comprehensive, multifactorial, and integrated. And include cross-sector actors, government, businesses, the private sector, planners, schools, citizens, and so on. In other words, we need multifactorial cross-sector interventions that impact conditions upstream as well as lifestyle choices. And this is in vain with a comprehensive understanding of environment that Gatrell refers to. So, you probably have heard about different types of initiatives that are emerging and sprouting in many places. I'm sharing here a few, mostly from California, and I'm sure that in other places where you're from, you have seen or heard about these emerging types of interventions that actually are designed in such a way that attempt to address multiple levels, multiple factors, and that are integrated and that involve communities and government and the public sector, the private sector. And so we have several in California. And now it is interesting to me, just last week I was at the Southern California Public Health Association conference, just leading to this one. And right there I had the opportunity to learn firsthand about one initiative going in three coastal communities in Southern California. And these interventions, at least some of them, are either implicitly or explicitly inspired by the concept of blue zones. So that's what I want to touch on next, because this is the blue zones is the central concept in the reflection that I'm sharing with you. So here's the officially designed blue zones up to this point. As you can see, they're from different parts of the world. Three actually are on islands, Sardinia, Okinawa in Japan, Sardinia in Italy, Ikara, a tiny island in the Aegean Sea in Greece, the Nicoya Peninsula in Costa Rica, and Loma Linda, California. The only American blue zone. And this Loma Linda is a town about 60 miles east of Los Angeles, and it has the highest concentration of Seventh-day Adventists in the United States. And through decades of research, NIH-funded research, a number of interesting insights has emerged from studying the relationships between the Adventist lifestyle and health outcomes. And the Adventist Health Studies are, by the way, based formally at our school of origin, the School of Public Health at Loma Linda University. We also have, like in the other blue zones, concentration of nonagenarians and centenarians in our population. And the full description, if you have interest, you know, I want to have some fun reading. National Geographic, a few years back, published a monographic issue describing the five blue zones as they had been investigated. Now, the first blue zone, the original one, the very first one that was described by Michel Poulin and Giovanni Pes. Giovanni Pes is from the University of Sassari in Italy, and Michel Poulin is from the Louvain University in Belgium. And so, as you can see, even in their original description, they used spatial analysis and geographic approach to model the data on, you know, this unusual demographic concentration of centenarians on the island. And so this was the first one. Now, clearly, if you think of the configuration of these blue zones on islands, relatively small pockets of population, the majority of them, the first idea that people were contemplating in the original researchers is, well, this probably represent unusual pockets of good genes. And some research has been done in that direction, particularly in the island of Sardinia and in Okinawa. And indeed, we seem to have now some empirical evidence that at least in those two blue zones, that there are these longevity genes. There is like the IM26 marker that some of you might have heard about that is characteristic of male longevity. So there is indeed a genetic component to these blue zones. But not only, because when we look at all of the, you know, the five blue zones in its entirety, they're in different places, different cultures, different environments, and so on. And so the next level of effort went into trying to deconstruct the lifestyles of these five blue zones and try to find commonalities as well as unique aspects with respect to each of them. And some research has gone in that direction, which you see referenced at the bottom of the slide. But they were able to indeed identify a number of lifestyle characteristics. Diet was a strong signal that emerged. Casual physical activity, simple life, strong social connectedness, a sense of purpose that was strongly influenced by religion. And it was also concluded religion and different religions, because we're dealing with different religions, Japan, Orthodox Christianity in the Greek island, Catholicism in Sardinia, Protestantism, the Adventists and Catholics in Costa Rica as well. So it's not uniform, but it seems that the sense of purpose and religion, a belief system that is a cultural element that has a strong motivational driver. So these things were emerged as this next wave of interest emerged around lifestyles. Now, more recently, the original Poulin and Pes have done some interesting studies in Sardinia in particular. And I loved it because, you know, they really adopted, again, a very geospatial approach to these assessments. And they studied the centenarians on the islands and trying to determine if there are characteristics of the environmental characteristics, like features of the landscape and things like that might make a difference. And indeed, that's what happened. They found statistically significant differences associated, for instance, with occupation, particularly shepherding. The terrain is kind of rugged, and so shepherding, you know, having to go over rugged terrain, and a number of other characteristics. Also, you know, observationally, you can tell, you know, in some of the places that there are specific ecological or environmental factors. For example, in Ikara in Greece, they grow over 150 varieties of grasses and herbs that they use, and that some of them have very, very specific properties. Some of them contain high levels of antioxidants and so on. So you can tell really that the environmental context is also important as another ingredient that goes into this. So here's my little summarization after deconstructing the blue zones. I think that there is an element of overall environmental quality, a conducive built environment structure, as we would describe it here in the United States. Also, healthy lifestyles. And healthy lifestyles are a natural part of life. They're not contrived schemes or anything. It's just the way people live is the default option. You don't have any other alternative than conducting a healthy lifestyle. And this is very important. Also, the general outlook on life, slow pace, low stress, sense of purpose, and very, very important also, very strong social connectedness. Family, friends, and family are very important. Personal relationships are critically important and nurtured. And so this is what we would refer to in here as community resilience. All of these are very resilient communities. So I've tried to summarize graphically like this paradigm for blue zones and using this type of like Venn diagrams, because I would like to propose that blue zones are where they are, appear where they appear, because we have the conducive or advantageous convergence of all of these factors together. Good genes, conducive lifestyles, and the right social and physical environments that underpin these blue zones. So when you have all of those ingredients, then it is likely that you're going to have a blue zone, and a blue zone that will include centenarians and so on. Now, that doesn't mean that at other places, if you don't have, for instance, the same unusual concentration of good genes, you may not have lots of people passing 100 years, but you can think that longevity will be noticeable at communities even without necessarily the best genes if the other ingredients are in place. But again, I think that this five blue zones, and there may be a few others, I believe they're still exploring and investigating to see if they can identify more. But clearly, those are all of the ingredients that go into it. Now, this is different. I'm advancing this. I'm sharing with you this concept for the first time. Where I'm referring to gray zones, which are like the opposite. They're in contrast to blue zones. And I'm going to tell you why I'm calling them, why gray zones. It's kind of serendipitous. Like the term blue zones is serendipitous too, by the way. There's no mystical sense to it or anything. It's just that the original demographers, when they were examining data on maps, they used a blue marker to kind of delineate some of this Sardinian and Greek zones, and they started calling them blue zones because the marker they used was blue. But so I'm using gray for referring to what would be exactly the other side of the coin. And I think we're also, most of us familiar with some of these, where we have the wrong convergence of factors. All of the factors are in the wrong direction. And we have, of course, those of you who are into social determinants of health and health inequalities and so on will probably know what I'm talking about. We know that deprivation, poverty, poor community conditions lead to poor health outcomes. And gray zones, I refer to them as, again, convergence of diminished environmental quality, non-conducive built environments, vulnerable communities, not resilient communities, where unhealthy lifestyles are more the norm. And the reason why I'm calling them gray zones is because from my office, which is on a third floor, when I look out my window, I see just, you know, a few miles across. That shot that you're looking at is one of the views that I have from my window on a smoggy day. And that, those are the inland valleys of Southern California. That's the west district of the city of San Bernardino. And that's where you see that grayish, brownish blanket of air pollution sitting on top of one of the most deprived communities in the United States. And so when I was thinking about this wrong convergence of factors, I thought that gray zones is probably not a bad descriptor of what they are. So here you have them side by side. Good environmental quality, poor environmental quality, connected built environment, disconnected built environment, resilient communities, vulnerable deprived communities, sense of purpose. On gray zones, life is really, really hard and difficult to think with meaning and enthusiasm towards tomorrow. And healthy lifestyle choices are enabled in these places. This concept that we're talking about now of the culture of health, that's exactly what prevails in the blue zones naturally as a part of life. So I wanted to link this. I've been always appealed by the concept of therapeutic landscapes that Will Gessler coined in 1998 to refer to these areas that historically places that we have attributed special characteristics. Sometimes, you know, in some cultures, some places have like healing properties, almost like mystical properties. But, you know, for most of us, I think that therapeutic landscapes can be simply spaces that bring us together, that make us feel good, like when you're on the top of a mountain or you're in the middle of nature. So blue zones to me are very close, you know, to use another healthographic concept, to what Gessler refers to as therapeutic landscape, places where there is the favorable convergence of environmental conditions, economic and social systems supporting good outcomes. And then we have detrimental landscapes, the blue zones. And I wanted to share very, very briefly, you know, remember that photograph that I show you of that smoggy area in Southern California? Well, that is a gray zone, and we just, by the way, recently concluded a thorough public health assessment of that community, because there is a very busy, big freight rail yard in the middle of West San Bernardino, in a very densely populated area that puts out about 22 tons of diesel particulates per year. So we have conducted an assessment, and part of it included also talking with community. The results from our community characterizations have just been published in the September issue of the Journal of Environmental Health, which actually chose our feature for their front page. But what I want to identify is notice how this gray zone, one of the worst in the United States, one of the worst in California, I could give you statistics on crime, on lack of access to health care, on lack of access to food. I could go on and on and on. But they're next to us. We are adjacent to each other. We're just separated virtually by a few miles. And I'm using this because I want, this is sort of my final point that I want to make, that this led me to further thinking to what I call the Adventist twist. Now, I want to clarify that technically speaking, the Adventist Blue Zone, even though the National Geographic folks assigned it to Loma Linda, it was originally described from health outcomes and lifestyle information for the entire Adventist Health Study population, the first phase that included about 34,000 Californians across the state, and the current phase since the year 99, that is a North American cohort, including Canada and the United States, of about 100,000 individuals, that this population is spread across North America. That's sort of, that map gives you, I created it using a kernel density tool to reflect the density of our own cohort in the continental United States. And as you can see, it pretty much follows the population density pattern of the country. And Even though, you know, Adventists truly share a lot, of course, of lifestyle characteristics. They share the Adventist lifestyle, but at the same time, they're embedded in the same fabric of life with the rest of the population. So remember that side-by-side blue zone to gray zone in next to Loma Linda in West San Bernardino. And to me, this opened an exciting opportunity, which my colleague and friend Dr. Risa is going to share with you some of our preliminary research, opens up the opportunity for exploring lifestyle and context, environment, broadly speaking, across geographies and across different conditions. So the fact that the Adventist Blue Zone actually is a North American Blue Zone offers those research opportunities. So I'm going to argue that I think blue zones, gray zones, probably offer a very interesting paradigm for us to use in conceptualizing and designing effective interventions and conducting research, understanding the linkages between lifestyle, chronic diseases, and other factors. They're truly a healthographic concept. And I also like about this paradigm of blue zones, gray zones, that blue zones in particular, unlike we do traditionally in public health, we're very good at measuring disease. It's very easy to measure disease. However, blue zones place the emphasis on health. They're health defined. And I like that. I think that's an interesting element. So I'm going to leave you with these two questions that to me are key important questions moving forward. As I mentioned, there are a number of initiatives and programs that are sprouting across the nation, and some of them they were explicitly talking about we want to transform such and such community into a blue zone. So can blue zones or conditions that are close to a blue zone can become commonplace? Can we really do it? And the other question is, how do individual lifestyle factors and context interact to influence our biographies and geographies? And like I said, a little later you will have some of our preliminary results precisely exploring this type of question. Thank you very much.